Okay, so today what I'd like to do is to explain the something about the proof of the arithmetic generating function for divisors, so this modular, classical modular form as opposed to the Siegel modular form in the beginning, and then I'd like to explain how one can use this modular form of weight 3/2 to define an arithmetic theta lift, which is some parallel of the usual theta lift, and I want to end by stating some sort of a conjecture, which is a parallel of the Walsh-Piaget theorem about the usual theta lift in the arithmetic context. So that's the idea. Let's see how much I get done. We recall some notation, and that is we have our quaternion algebra over Q, which is fixed. This is indefinite, and also a division algebra. We have dB, which is the product of the ramified primes. Which we're assuming is bigger than 1, so this eliminates the modular curves in the matrix algebra, unfortunately, but just a question of how many technical details you could carry at a given time. OB was our maximal order, and we had this vector space V, which was the set of all X and B, such that the trace of X is equal to 0, and all these objects will play roles little by little, but then the main player in the game here was this space M, which was this moduli, the arithmetic surface, which you remember was a moduli space for pairs A iota, where this was an abelian scheme, an abelian surface, with an action of OB. So this was our basic object. So this was our arithmetic surface, and you remember then that also that MQ, the generic fiber of this arithmetic surface, was the Shimura curve M over the rationals. So this is a scheme over spec Z, this guy. Okay, so this was our basic background notation. And then what we're interested in is this generating function. So this is where this is what the theorem is about. So here we take tau as U plus IV in the upper half plane, and then we had this generating function, which was the sum on integers t of a thing called z hat of tv times q to the t, and this v are the same. This is our generating function, and I have to remind you about what these cycles were, where, and now we had z hat of tv was defined as follows. It's all just a reminder, but then come into play as we go along and calculate things. In the case where t is positive, then this z hat of tv is a certain cycle z of t together with the Green's function for it, psi of t. So this was our Green's function, about which I've said essentially nothing, but there's some details explained in the notes, and I think just in the interest of saving time, I won't say anything about it. I'll just consistently allow you to read that in the notes if it interests you. And then this was this cycle, which was the locus of pair of triples, A iota, as here, together with an X, which was a special endomorphism. So this is a special endomorphism of this guy, with Q of X, which is to say minus X squared is equal to T. So these were the analog of our CM points on the generic fiber of this surface. In other words, on the Shimura curve, these are essentially just CM points with complex multiplication by the corresponding imaginary quadratic field, but then they become horizontal together with vertical curves on the surface M. So maybe I should put up here someplace a picture of M. This might be a good place to have it. Very enlightening picture. Sort of looks like a TV tube with additional structure. Is that how we say it? I'm not sure. Anyway, here is the generic fiber, M, which is MQ. Here, of course, is spec Z on the bottom here. And then typically we have our primes P. And as you'll remember, if P does not divide dB, then we have good reduction. That's not actually a cusp there, just an accident. And if P divides dB, thing looks like this, we have bad reduction, but p-adic uniformization, which makes it easier to calculate than it would be otherwise. All right, in any case, this cycle here defined this way, can have both vertical and horizontal components. It has horizontal components like this, whose generic points are these CM points, and it can have, doesn't always, but it can have vertical stuff like this in the primes of bad reduction, components of the fibers of bad reduction for various P's dividing DB. They may or may not be there, but it is easy to determine in terms of little t when they occur. So that's what this thing is in the case where t is positive. When t is negative, the formula for the Green's function, as I mentioned in the last lecture, still defines a nice smooth function on the complex points on MC. And so we can just take 0 comma this. Now remember, these are all classes. This is valued in Chow hat 1 of M, first arithmetic Chow group. So I'm describing a cycle or a divisor together with its Green's function, which is a typical class, defines a class in this arithmetic Chow group. In this case, we have 0 comma psi of TV, which is a class in the arithmetic Chow group. And so when T is negative, this is the form that the class has. And then finally, there's the case when T is equal to 0. And I didn't explain this in much detail last time, and I probably won't give much more this time, but let me at least write it a little more carefully, just to illustrate what is at stake. Here we have minus omega hat, which I'll explain in just a moment, 0 comma log V, and then plus an additional 0 comma C. All right, so I want to explain each of these terms. Well, let's start with the easiest one. Log V, V is just some number. It's the imaginary part of tau, but as far as the surface M is concerned, it's just a constant, and therefore I view it as a constant function, and it sits inside of the C infinity functions, which are part of this arithmetic Chow group of this form. So it's just a C infinity function. So this is a very easy term. This is really a constant, not even a function. I'll say more about it in just a moment. And finally, omega hat, let me add that somewhere. Maybe put it over here. So M is this moduli space for abelian surfaces. So it has a universal abelian scheme over it like this. So you can think of this as a family of two-dimensional abelian varieties over this base here. And a family of abelian varieties has a zero section like this. So there's a section of this family. And here you can look at the relative differentials. So this thing, this sheaf is giving you the relative differentials on each of these abelian varieties. And we can, of course, take top degree. There are abelian surfaces, so these will be top degree holomorphic differentials on each of the abelian varieties. And then we can pull this sheaf down to the base using the zero section. And this is omega, the Hodge fine bundle. And by its construction, it comes equipped with a metric, which I don't want to go into describing, but there's a very natural metric that such a thing has, given essentially point by point by integrating the top degree holomorphic form against its wedge over the abelian variety. So at each point, there's a natural metric on this thing, which we normalize in a certain way, which I won't explain. But when I take the pair here consisting of this bundle with this metric, this defines an element of Chow hat 1 here. So omega hat is the pair. Sorry for using the blackboard so badly, but I learned my lesson last time. I've got to squeeze things in a little bit. Anyway, this omega hat is this pair consisting of this line bundle together with its metric. And I should mention that this line bundle here essentially becomes the line bundle of modular forms of weight 2 when I restrict it to the generic fiber. So that's what it is. Okay, so that's this class coming from this. It's minus here. And finally, what about C? Well, let me just write C somewhere here, and I'll erase it in just a moment. In fact, it's on another sheet in my notes. But just to be completely precise about this, C is a kind of fudge constant which should be 0. Okay, so here's two possible definitions of C. If we get around to proving a conjecture which we've made some time ago, then the answer will be C is 0, and we can just ignore it. On the other hand, so let's put a question mark here, that's the correct value of C. However, what C is actually equal to in this theorem, which is a theorem without any question mark about it, is the following. You take the height pairing of this class omega hat with itself. Now, remember on this arithmetic Chow group that there's a height pairing from this guy to C. Now, last time you'll recall I had a height pairing that was valued in Chow hat 2, but I also had an isomorphism from Chow hat 2 to C, so I'm simply composing them here. So So this is like taking the cup product and then numerically evaluating it on a top degree class. So there's a pairing, a height pairing like this. And so C should be essentially this pairing of this guy with itself. That's not zero. However, minus what we expect the value of this to be. All right. So what I'm really telling you is a conjecture as to what this self-pairing of omega hat is. And the answer is zeta sub dB of minus 1, which means I leave out the Euler factors dividing dB, times 2 zeta prime of minus 1 over zeta of minus 1, plus 1 minus log 4 pi minus gamma, this is Euler's gamma, minus the sum over P divides dB of P log P over P minus 1. Okay, so on this blackboard is therefore a conjecture about what this should be. It should be that number, and that's what this means. But in any case, over there, we put in the difference between this arithmetic quantity and this ugly quantity, which we believe it should be equal to. Okay? So that's what C is here. Okay, so much about zero, I hope. Okay, so this is just a reminder then. I've told you what all the terms are, and of course the theorem is that this thing is a modular form of weight 3/2 valued in this group. And of course it's not holomorphic in the sense that there's this imaginary part here, dependence in the coefficients is definitely occurring. It's also occurring in the constant term. You see it log V here. So this is not a holomorphic modular form. And I explained last time what it means to be modular. It means that the various component functions are modular. All right, so I want to sketch for you the idea or what goes into the proof of this statement. And basically, just in words, the idea is that you take this function and you look at the structure of this arithmetic Chow group and you decompose the arithmetic Chow group into various parts, which I'm about to describe, and you look at the component of the arithmetic Chow group in each of those pieces and you can figure out what it is, and that thing is modular. So that's the idea of the proof. So what we need is we need to decompose Chow hat 1 of M, so you get to see a little bit more about what goes into the structure of this particular group. That's the point of the next little discussion. Now, I've already reminded you there's a height pairing on here, and there's an index theorem which says this height pairing is non-degenerate and tells you that it's like the intersection pairing on something that has signature 1 plus and the rest all minuses. And of course, it's infinite dimensional because there's a C infinity in here, so it's a Hilbert space with infinite dimensional negative inner product. All right. But anyway, let's describe the various components that go into here. So the first thing is that inside of here, I obviously have this line. I'm also, by the way, being sloppy about whether I'm taking real or complex coefficients. For the moment, I mean, otherwise I should tensor with C over here. But for the moment, let me just talk about real coefficients, which is what I really want to be talking about. So first of all, this class, we have this Hodge class sitting inside. So we have one real line in here spanned by this Hodge class. And there are a couple of other things that we have inside of here. One is a space which I'll call vert. And this is the subspace generated by classes of the form y sub p 0, where y sub p is a component of mp, where p divides dB. So it's one of the components of a fiber of bad reduction. Now, of course, you could, if you like, take a full component of which there's only one for a prime of good reduction, but as I'll explain in a moment, that doesn't make very much difference. All right? I'll come back to that point. Anyway, this is the subspace generated by these classes. I'll call that vert because these are the purely vertical classes. Now, and we have this and this, and now one more thing we have is we have what I'll call C infinity 0, and that is the classes of the form, so this is generated by classes of the form 0 comma phi, where phi is a C infinity function on MC, on the complex points of the Shimura curve. So it's some C infinity function such that its integral against the usual hyperbolic metric, we're taking a uniformized curve here, so there's a natural hyperbolic metric, this integral is 0. So it's perp to the constants. So that's this space. So these things are sitting inside. Of course, here I've left out the constants, and so I would like to make also in here a line spanned by what I'll call 1, which is simply 0, 1. So that's your constants coming back. Okay, so here I've left out the constant functions because of this, and here I put them back in. Right? So I'm just describing to you various subspaces of this guy. Okay, these are obvious subspaces. Okay, so now what I would like to also note is that if we take this Chow hat 1M, now these are supposed to be essentially divisors on this arithmetic surface together with this Green's function. If we just toss out the Green's function, forget about the Green's function, and restrict the divisor to the generic fiber, which is M, regular M, explained here, I simply restrict the divisor to the generic fiber, I get a map from the arithmetic Chow group to the usual Chow group of the generic fiber, which is just pick of the generic fiber. Okay? So on here, of course, we have the degree map, and since I'm sort of tensoring everything with R or C or something, it's a degree map to R, but really it's just the degree of a zero cycle. That's the basic map, so we call it to R here because I've tensored everything with R. We get a degree map, and so all together we get a map like this, which I'll call degree Q. Degree Q just indicates the fact that it's a restriction to the generic fiber. So this is sort of the rational degree map on this thing. Okay. Now, of course, if I take the kernel of this degree map here, this whole thing is like pick, I see essentially the Jacobian, the rational points on the Jacobian. This is what I see here as the kernel of this degree map. Of course, tensored over Z, this is a free abelian group, well, not free, an abelian, finitely generated abelian group, but the torsion part disappears now because I'm tensoring it with R. Remember, I'm tensoring everything with R. So this thing is sitting inside of here as the kernel of this degree map. Okay, and I would like to call this thing here the Mordell Weiss space of M, but I won't write M because the notation is ugly. Oh, wow, okay. Jim says it's nice. We'll put it. Okay. Okay. Anyway, this is the Mordell base space, which is living here. And finally, then, what I'd like to do is to put all that analysis together. And I guess I have still enough room to squeeze it onto this blackboard. Okay. So what I do is I let M W tilde be the following space. You see, here up above this MW tilde, I've defined various subspaces of this Chow group, the constant functions, omega hat, et cetera, vert. And so what I would like to do is I would like to take the perp of a bunch of that stuff with respect to this pairing, and that's going to be MW tilde. So here's what I take. I take this line spanned by omega hat plus the vert part plus C infinity 0, okay? And I take the perp of that with respect to the height pairing. Okay? Okay, now I should say one last thing, and that is to notice that among the relations that I have for my arithmetic Chow group, if I have any rational function, div hat is just the usual divisor of my function, and then minus log absolute f squared viewed as a function on the complex points. That's my Green's function. So that's a typical class which is zero in the arithmetic Chow group by definition. So if we take PF to be the prime number P, viewed as a rational function on this arithmetic surface, I get the following relation. Zero, which is what this is in the arithmetic Chow group, is equal to, in the arithmetic Chow group, div hat of P, which is, or div of P, which is just the fiber at P, that's where P is equal to zero, and then minus 2 log P. So that's zero, because this is a relation in this group. So what this says is that the class MP0, so if I take a full fiber at P, that this is the same in the arithmetic Chow group as 2 times log P times 1. I'm illustrating the fact here that I've tensored with R, if you go back and I remember the definition I made. Okay? So you get this relation in the arithmetic Chow group. This thing is equal to this, which is important because it shows that why it is that I took the constants out of here, because they're already sitting in here.
Okay.
That's what this says. All right. Anyway, so I've defined this space MW tilde, and so there's a proposition which is due to, say, Faltings, Hurljack, which says that basically we get a nice decomposition of the arithmetic Chow group this way. Okay, so the first statement is that the arithmetic Chow group, the whole thing, is just equal to this Mordell Vey tilde direct sum R omega hat plus vert direct sum C infinity 0, where this block, and this block are perp to each other with respect to the pairing. So this is perp to everything else, this block is perp to everything else, and so on. So this is an orthogonal decomposition of this group with respect to the height pairing, here essentially by construction. That's the first statement. The second statement is that the restriction map from Chow hat 1 of M to the generic fiber, M like this, which we already used in defining the arithmetic degree over there, induces an isomorphism, and better yet, an isometry between MW tilde, this subspace I've defined in here by these conditions, and MW, the Mordell Vey space, where isometry refers to the fact that on here I use this height pairing, which is this Gillet-Soulet height pairing on the arithmetic Chow group, which I've been using, and on here we use the negative of the Néron-Tate height, which is a positive definite thing on there. So you see the index theorem is going to be something, this is all the negative part. The index for the index theorem. So this gives an isometry between this particular space and the Mordell Vey space, and I guess that's all I needed to say. Okay, so that's the result we're going to use. So you see, the point of this is that it gives us a decomposition of this Chow group, and we now have this modular, or this generating function, not at all modular yet, this generating function here, which valued here. So we can take its components in the various pieces there. That's the idea. And also, as I described, this whole thing here, this is a finite dimensional vector space with a Néron-Tate height, or it's negative. This space is finite dimensional, and this thing is dense in the usual Hilbert space of C infinity functions perp to the constants on the Riemann surface, and that's the metric on there. So basically, this whole thing has a nice non-degenerate inner product on it, which we can use. Okay. So the idea then is to take this phi hat 1 of tau and compute its pairing with various generators of this group, as you can see here, which are used here, and to identify what these are. Okay. So the first result is the following. So the first two things we're going to take the pairing with are the constant functions 1 and the class omega hat. So these are two of our very basic generators for this group, as you see here. Okay? They're both sitting in this piece. So we're going to take the inner product with those. Okay. Now, to describe this, I have to say introduce another player here, and that is there's an Eisenstein series E1 of tau S B, associated to the quaternion algebra B. I don't have time to define this very carefully, but this will be an Eisenstein series, an unusual elliptic modular Eisenstein series of weight 3 halves associated to B. So it's defined by the usual kind of series, weight 3 halves. I won't. This is for SL2Z now. Remember, what's always true is that my generating function tau is going to be, everything's modular with respect to some classical subgroup of SL2Z. Right. I should have said this, so not with respect to M. There's always two. Right. So for gamma 0, 4 dB. Okay, so classical modular form. So this tau here is classical modular form. So there are two things going on here. There's the Shimura curve and its arithmetic surface on the one side, and then the other side is just classical modular forms, weight 3 halves. Okay, so So this guy will just be a classical modular form. So this is 4 gamma 0, 4 dB. Anyway, there's an Eisenstein series like this, and I normalize it up. Maybe I should write it down. I'm going to be way behind on time here anyway, so. It's a sum on gamma infinity mod, SL2Z mod gamma infinity, so C tau plus D to the minus 3/2, which is what I'd like to do. Of course, this doesn't converge, so we put in C tau plus D to the minus S minus 1/2 times the imaginary part to the 1/2 S minus 1/2 times a certain function which depends on S and gamma and B. So this is the link for B. So I'm making an Eisenstein series here, a weight 3/2. This convergence factor gets me good analytic continuation, gives me good convergence in a half plane. And here, what I'm doing is I'm fixing it so it doesn't change the weight by putting the imaginary part here. And then finally, there's some function of gamma and S. I'm about to say that. Okay. So anyway, there's an Eisenstein series weight attached to this quaternion algebra. And this is a relatively concrete, this is a function, completely concrete function you can write down depending on B and this gamma. And also, I said this is a modular form for gamma 0, 4, et cetera, et cetera. And you see SL2Z here. But what's true is that this guy is sort of an average for a gamma 0, 4 dB has many cusps, and I'm averaging some kind of Eisenstein series for the various cusps in some way. And so what comes to you naturally is this series like this. And it has the nice property that it has a functional equation, an odd functional equation. So S, B, maybe it's even, I can't remember. It doesn't matter. In any case, this guy is normalized up, so it has a nice functional equation, and so on. But it turns out that the point we're interested in is, the clue is here, we want the point 1/2, where formally this disappears. This is, of course, in the half plane where you have to reach it by analytic continuation. All right. In any case, there's an Eisenstein series like this. And so the theorem is that if I take the inner product of this guy with 1, which, of course, is just the generating function for the inner product of all these cycles with 1, and is also just the degree. So it turns out that the inner product with anything, I'm going to put a little formula here. If I have any class and I inner product with 1, this is just degree q of z up to a constant. I think it's 1/2. Okay? So in fact, taking inner product with 1 is the same as taking the image under this degree q map. Okay. Anyway, so this is equal to degree q of this generating function. And that's equal to the value at 1/2 of this Eisenstein series, okay? And the reason Jens was beginning to recognize this is that in his thesis, he considered the case of modular curves where you do this, the same type of relation like this, take this degree generating function, but because they're cusps, it's much more complicated, and this happens to be holomorphic, in fact, but in his case, it's not holomorphic, and it turns out to be essentially Zagier's Eisenstein series of weight 3/2, very famous classical Eisenstein series. So that's what comes out here. Okay, so that's the value, that's the, this degree, it's the value of this Eisenstein series. And then what's true is that the derivative, in other words, the next term in the Lorentz expansion at the same point is the pairing of this generating function with omega hat. And this took, what was it, 80 pages? Something like that. Doesn't remember. It's best not to remember how many pages this took. Okay. So the point is, in any case, that you see these two components, if you like, of this guy are modular forms transforming the way this Eisenstein series does. That's the first thing. So that tells us some components of this phi hat. So those are modular. Okay. So now there are various other things we need to pair with. So we need to compute the pairing of this guy with a typical class of the form YP0. Okay, so that's the other generators of this space vert that we have here. This we've taken care of. The constants in here we've taken care of. Okay. Of each cycle on the generic fiber, so it's just counting the number of ZCM points. So it's given by some class numbers.
Okay, okay.
Right. Okay. Right, so in other words, you take this generating function, degree Q, apply it to each of the coefficients. This means take this cycle, throw away the Green's function, count the number of points in the generic fiber. It's just some number of CM points given by some kind of a class number, generalized class number, and that's what you get. Okay. So the next thing you need to do is to compare this guy with these vertical cycles like this. Maybe I should do that. Okay, so the vertical part here. So first I should say just a very brief word about the vertical part. What's true is we have our quaternion algebra B, but we can also make a corresponding or related quaternion algebra B upper P, which is gotten as follows. This has the same invariance as B for all L not equal to infinity and P, and they're the opposite at infinity and P. So this guy becomes a definite quaternion algebra. So it's ramified at infinity, also ramified at P, or rather has the opposite invariance at P, but the only thing we're interested in is it's actually unramified at P, because this was ramified at P. We're considering here P divides DB. Invariant of the quaternion algebra. So it's plus one if it's a division, a matrix algebra locally, and minus one if it's a division algebra. So and essentially what we're doing is we twist the quaternion algebra at P and infinity. It was indefinite, so it's a matrix. The old one was matrix algebra at infinity and was definite at P, because P divides DB. Somewhere I've written that. And now the new one is definite, so it's ramified at infinity, and unramified at P. So this is a switched algebra. And what happens then is that I can make a quadratic space. Just as I had B and V, I also have BP and V upper P, trace zero elements, the same definitions, except now this is a positive definite quadratic space. And what happens then is that the components are essentially parametrized by lattices or certain kinds of orders or something in here. Okay? So that they're, the YPs correspond to certain kinds of lattices in VP. So I just will say only that. And this comes out of p-adic uniformization. It's a standard thing. Ron Libnay was speaking about it, I believe, more or less in his, or using it certainly in his talk. And associated, so each YP has an associated lattice in this space. And what's true is that this product here, if I take that YP, that's a vertical component, doesn't need a Green's function, it defines a class in Chow hat, one just by itself. I take the pairing of our generating function with this class, this is equal to the theta function attached to this lattice, which has weight 3/2 and same level and transformation law as everything else on the board. So this is the second, this is also a theorem, and it describes more inner products of this guy. So you see these classical theta series attached to all these definite quaternion algebras are also lurking here, embedded in this guy. They're part of the machinery. Okay. So the next thing, there are just a couple more pieces. One is not so interesting, that's the C infinity part. So let's suppose I have something in C infinity zero, which you can think of as a Mas form, this time really for the quaternion gamma. Okay, so this phi is like a Mas, C infinity function. If I require it to be an eigenfunction of the Laplacian, it will become a Mas form, Mas function, right, for this gamma coming from the quaternion algebra. So I have such a thing. And it therefore defines a class which is purely vertical now, namely something of the form like this. So this is the analog of the purely vertical at the finite primes part that I just discussed here. This is purely vertical at infinity. It's just no cycle at all, but then this smooth function as a Green's function. And I take the, if I take the pairing of this guy with this class, what I get is just the classical theta lift of this guy. This will now be a Mas form of weight 3/2, whose eigenvalue, if this was really a Mas form, is related to the other. So the two eigenvalues are linked in a certain way. So, in fact, taking the pairing of this guy with these purely vertical at infinity classes simply realizes the classical theta lift between Mas forms on the quaternion algebra and Mas forms on SL2 for this group and of weight 3/2. Okay, and so finally, the really interesting part, or important part in some sense, is what's left. And if you look at what I've written down here, what you find is that I've really taken care of this piece, as I just did, omega hat and vert. So this is all taken care of. And what's left is the Mordell-Weil component. Now, because of this isometry here, I may as well simply take my generating function valued here, restrict it to the generic fiber, and view it as, well, what happens to it when I restrict it to the generic fiber? Okay? Well, of course, it won't have degree zero. These cycles don't have degree zero in general, but we've already seen that the degrees give me an Eisenstein series. So what I do here is this. I take phi hat 1 of tau, and I take its restriction to the generic fiber, like this. Okay? And then I subtract from that this Eisenstein series, e tau 1 half b, which occurs up there in the degree, divided by, I guess, the degree of omega hat times, well, omega res q of omega hat. And there's probably a 2 here somewhere, because there was a half somewhere else. So all I'm saying is I have a class. I should mention that the degree of omega hat is not 0. Right? This degree of this omega hat is not 0, because its degree is essentially just the volume of the three-month surface. Because if you check what the Chern class is and you integrate, it's just the volume of the three-month surface, which is not 0. So you can divide by this degree. And so what I'm doing is I'm simply taking this class here and subtracting off coefficient by coefficient the degree of the cycle. That's what this top statement says. The coefficient of this guy is the degree of the cycle on the generic fiber. So I'm just really have taking these guys here, take res q of these guys, z hat tv minus this degree of the same guy, degree q over degree omega hat. Sorry for writing fast, but I'm worrying about time now. That's the generating function now. This is now degree 0. So this thing here is valued in the usual Mordell base space. I forgot a res q. Yeah. Well, I've got it. No, I didn't. I've got 2 of them. Well, I have an extra one on top. That's right. Sorry. Okay. Anyway, this thing here is a generating function, looks like this, but its image under res q is just in the usual Mordell base space because I've made degree 0. So to compute this Mordell Weil component of my phi hat, which is sitting here, I just use this isometry. I just take its inverse image of that restriction under that isometry, right, under this isomorphism. So I can define phi hat 1 mw to be the thing which maps to phi this thing that I just have over here. So maybe I'll write it this way. This is a terrible notation. Do I lose some points for doing it this way? I think so. Okay. So this will be in mw tilde. That's the component in mw tilde. Right. Okay. Which is not this, by the way. Because this may still have some other inner products and so on and so forth, which I don't. Okay. In any case, I have this thing here. So showing that this thing here is modular is equivalent to showing that its image, which I'll simply call now phi 1 mw, in M, which is mw valued, to show that this is modular. There should be a tau here. These are just the same under this isomorphism. Okay, and so finally what's true is that there's a theorem of Borchert's, and I like to put here Borchert's plus epsilon because if you look in the theorem of Borchert's you won't find it all this statement, but you can massage his theorem and fix it in certain ways so that Borchert's theorem says that this guy down here is modular of weight 3/2. Okay? And that finishes the proof, because now I've shown all the different components of this thing are the modular forms of weight 3/2. Now, obviously, I'm not writing down the transformation laws, et cetera, et cetera. There's lots of details here, but that's the proof. That's the idea of the proof. And so finally, I should say, maybe just a moment, what's behind this theorem of Borchert's? Essentially, what Borchert's does is he writes down sufficiently many relations, explicit relations, among these Hegner point coefficients that we have here. Okay? He writes down enough relations to prove that this is a modular form. This is somehow the issue, to produce lots of relations among these different points, enough so that this becomes a modular form. That's a very vague statement. There's also a method due to Zagier by embedding this thing in a Hilbert modular surface and restricting relations among Hertzeberg-Zagier curves. giving relations among points and using simply connectivity of the surface and so on, which will also prove this is a modular form. So in this case, okay. In any case, that component is also a modular form. Okay. So that finishes this proof of this basic result. But the next thing maybe to do is to explain what it might be used for. So that's what I'd like to do next. Okay. For that, I probably need to figure out where to write it. Okay. Let's go over here. Okay. So the idea now is that if you have this statement that says that this generating function valued in chow hat 1 is a modular form of weight 3 halves, what good is it? What can you do with this? Well, one thing you can do is you can define an arithmetic theta lift. And the way you do that is you take an F, which is a modular form of weight 3 halves for gamma 0, 4, dB. In other words, just like the modular form that I've just generated. And I integrate that against my given modular, this generating function. Okay, let me put the bar in here in the right place, maybe. Maybe I didn't put it in my notes at all. Anyway, after the... Well, let's just write it this way. Let's write it as F, Peterson inner product with phi hat 1 of tau. Okay. So it's just the integral over H mod, let's call this gamma prime for the moment, gamma prime of F of tau, theta phi hat 1 of tau bar d mu tau, and then I guess we have to have v tier to some power, okay, like 3 halves, okay? Okay, so we can take this Peterson inner product, but the key point is that what we're doing is we're essentially just integrating out the parameter tau, and since we're valued in the chow hat, this thing, when I get done here, is going to be an element of chow hat 1 of m. Okay, so when I integrate out the extra parameter, this generating function parameter, I get an element of chow hat 1. In short, what I get is a map from this space to chow hat 1 of M, which I call the arithmetic theta lift. And so the question is to try to analyze this lifting. So that's what I want to describe now. I'm going to use that in a moment, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, of course, one thing is certainly true, and that is that if I took a component here and I take its height pairing with the generating function, I get an element of S 3 halves. That's just a similar idea starting on the other side. You can go either direction. And I've just described to you in the proof of this theorem that I discussed what the images of certain classes are. Okay. So what we do then is we note that, in particular, if we take this F, and let's make a name for this. I should have written it up here somewhere. We call this theta hat of F, this arithmetic theta lift. And so the thing to notice is that if I take the pairing of theta hat of F, which is an element of this arithmetic chow group, with, for example, the constants, or its pairing with omega hat, of course, I can do the pairing in either order. This is a height pairing now. But I can also write this as the pairing of F with respect to the pairing of phi hat 1 of tau with 1. This is like this. So I can switch the order. This, you see, just becomes an Eisenstein series, as by one of the theorems which I think I've probably erased by now. This becomes essentially the value of this Eisenstein series. But F was a cusp form, so this is 0. And similarly for the second one, where you simply get this thing is a derivative of an Eisenstein series in terms of S, but the integral against S for all S is 0, so this is also 0. So this means that this theta hat of F is automatically perp to this guy and to the constants. Okay? Now, one other thing, and that is that if I take a class in here, which is essentially given by these C infinity functions, these are vertical at infinity, it's also perp to these because, as I explained in an analogous theorem, if I take the lift back of a class like that, I get a Mas form. and this is a holomorphic cusp form. It's implicit in what I'm saying here, a holomorphic cusp form. So it's also perp to this piece. And so the only thing that's left is this and the purely vertical part. And in fact, the vertical part perp to the constants, or perp to omega hat. Okay. So that's what I'd like to describe. I'd like to describe the criterion, more or less, or description of when does this class vanish. Okay. Now, to do that, it's best, really, to remember a little bit about Walsh-Fréchet theory and the classical theta lift in this context, because there should be a parallel aspect here. Okay. So let me just back up just a moment and remind you a little bit about that classical business. If I had a cusp form of weight 3/2, I'm going to stop writing the level and so on, but any cusp form of weight 3/2, and I integrated against the classical theta function, so theta of tau phi for any phi in the Schwarz space of VA like this, and I make the theta function for it, I take this Petersen inner product, this might be called the usual theta lift depending on the phi of F. This is the classical theta lift. So this was something that was studied in great detail by Walsh-Fréchet. And so what we get then is if we think in terms of automorphic representations, which I'd like to do, I'd like to think of this F as corresponding to some automorphic representation on the metaplectic group. So G prime A is the metaplectic cover of SL2. And we're going to be dealing with automorphic forms on there. And this means cusp forms, and this means perp to O1 theta functions, which I don't have time to explain in more detail. If you know about it, that's okay. Otherwise, it's not very important. In any case, if I have an automorphic, I would like to speak in the language of automorphic representation. So to such an F, or better yet, to such a sigma, if the Archimedean part is a holomorphic discrete series of weight 3/2, I get such an F, which would be a Hecke eigenform in some sense. Okay. So what I can do then is I get a theta lift by letting F run over this space of sigma. I'm going to be a little sloppy about on the group or classical versus Lebesgue here. If I let F run over the space of sigma, I get, by doing this theta lift and also let the phi vary, I get a space theta sigma of VB. So this is the span. It's the space of automorphic forms on for B star. I get a space of automorphic forms for B star from this given space as I vary the phi and the F. So this is the Walsh-Fréchet space. And the question, Walsh-Fréchet characterized when this is non-zero. And this will be quite analogous to what we need to characterize here. The relations will be similar, so that's why I want to explain the Walsh-Fréchet result. So the first point is that we have to do a little bit of local theory in this to describe this business. So our local theory, of course, our sigma here will be a tensor product of a sigma infinity with finite places, sigma p's. I'm separating this because our sigma infinity will be very special in the end. But in any case, the local theory is, if I start with a sigma p, there's some analogous local theta lift. I'm not going to try to describe it here, but there's a local theta lift which runs parallel to this global theory, but it has the following property. You see, I have this quaternion algebra that I started with here in this whole business, which might or might not be ramified at p. But let me let bp plus or minus be a quaternion algebra whose invariant at p is plus or minus 1. So there are two quaternion algebras. One is the matrix algebra. The plus one is the matrix algebra. The minus one is the division algebra. And so given a sigma p, there are two local theta lifts. I'm not writing down the definition, but there are two of them. And so let's associate it to these guys. I have spaces vp plus or minus, the trace zero elements in there with the quadratic form and so on. And so there'll be a theta lift, some representation of bp star associated to plus and minus for a given sigma. And the key local fact is local theta dichotomy. And what this says is precisely one of the spaces theta sigma p vp plus or minus is not equal to 0. Okay? So one of these two spaces, exactly one of these spaces, is not zero, and this is for any sigma. So for any sigma p. Okay, exactly one of these is non-zero. And so we'll set epsilon p of sigma p to be the sign where it's not zero. Okay, so that theta sigma p vp epsilon p sigma p, too many p's, is not zero. Anyway, this is the correct sign, as it were. Okay. So what's true then is that this global theta lift is compatible with the local theta lifts. So that if I start with a sigma like this, and I try to lift to b, vb, what will happen is if I look at the localizations of b, and they aren't the right ones from the point of view of the local lift, so what I'm saying here is that sigma p can lift to one of these two spaces, but not both. If I try to look at this global lift, it's isomorphic to the tensor product of the local lifts. And so if I don't have the invariance right at every place, I just automatically get zero because of local obstructions, which are here. Okay? So given a sigma, there's going to be at most one b globally, which will work. You have to take the right signs. But clearly there are two possibilities. There's a global product formula for these invariants of the quaternion algebra, and therefore there's two possibilities. If the product of the signs is plus one, then there'll be a unique b. If the product of the signs is minus one, there'll be no b. All right. And so let me describe very briefly what the connection between these signs is and root numbers. That's the important point here in this theory. Okay. So let me just pie rip a little space here and remind you that I'm going to be considering eventually this space here. So one more fact that should be part of this local epsilon dichotomy is that there's also a way of associating to every sigma like this a representation called Waldorf sigma, which is a representation of PGL2, the split algebra. Okay, so there's always a reference point, if you like, a corresponding representation of PGL2. And what's true about these guys is that epsilon p of sigma p is equal to the root number at the center of the corresponding local component. I'm writing P inside or outside. There's a local Wald or a global Wald. They're compatible. So this Wald here, in other words, just like sigma is factorizable, this is factorizable. Tensor product Wald sigma P. So this epsilon P that occurs here is essentially this root number. This isn't quite right. There's some central sign you have to put in here. For us, it'll do. Okay. So in any case, the epsilon p's controlling this target are coming from this root number. And so if we look at the global situation, there are precisely two situations. So this is the theorem of Waldsberger. Okay? So given sigma, we have two cases such that, let's suppose that the root number, the global root number of the corresponding representation is plus 1. That's the product of these local ones. Suppose it's plus 1, then there exists a unique global quaternion algebra B such that the tensor product over all P, less than or equal to infinity, of theta sigma P VP upper B is not 0. And in fact, let me call this bold B just to distinguish it from our beloved B that we started with over here. Okay, so it's being determined by these root numbers. So okay, there's a unique global quaternion algebra determined by these signs whose product is plus one. And what I'm saying here is that the local theta lifts are all non-zero. But that doesn't mean that the corresponding global theta lift is non-zero. So this is part one. That's the theta dichotomy. And part two is that theta sigma VB, the global lift, which is defined by these global integrals, is not zero, if and only if, in addition, I've already fixed this thing, the central value of this Waldsberger lift is not zero. Okay, so this is Waldsberger's theorem, phrased in a certain way. Okay. So I would now like to bring these facts back around to bring them to bear on our situation. So we have our arithmetic theta lift, which is described here, which is also given by some global integral. Okay, so notice, by the way, up here, that maybe it should have been listed as 3, if epsilon 1/2 walled sigma is equal to minus 1, in other words, if the root number of this L function is minus 1, then you can't even kill all the local obstructions. And this implies, therefore, that this theta lift, sigma VB, equals 0 for all B. Because it dies for local reasons. You can't kill the local obstructions. Okay. So now we're in a situation of our global theta lift, where let's suppose now this sigma, this F is corresponding to some sigma, where sigma infinity is the holomorphic discrete series of weight 3/2, and then there's some finite components like this. Okay. So what I'd like to say as a relation here, I think I'm not going to have time to go through all the doubling integrals and so on and so forth and to see what one can really do. So I'll just say very briefly what happens at this stage. So we're now in a situation where I have this F of weight 3/2. It again corresponds to some automorphic representation. So this kind of a theory is in the background, should be in the background. And so what should happen now is there would be two cases. So there'll be one case in which we have the global root number plus 1. And then the second case is in the case in which the global root number of this guy is minus 1. And they're now both of interest, it turns out. Okay? And so the fact is that in this first case, so let's call this the even case. So in the even case, what you have is that theta hat of F lies in the vertical part. Okay? It's purely in the vertical part. So we're now studying this theta lift here. It's in the vertical part. And moreover, we might even call it the vertical part sub P, where what we do is we have to have this B, which is now being determined by the fact that I have root number plus 1, according to this, the B has to be the B upper P, which is parameterizing the fiber, what's going on in the fiber at P. Otherwise, it's 0. Okay? So this is one case. And then the second case would be the odd case, and that's the case in which theta hat of F, in the odd case, theta hat of F is in the Mordell-Weil space, turns out. Has to be in the other direction. And finally, and here, we have to really work with exactly the level and so on that we're dealing with this quaternion algebra. Remember, on gamma 0 dB, et cetera, et cetera. So let me just end. I'm running. Sorry? Well, here we have simply P divides dB. So the idea is, why is there one P? Well, I'm starting with sigma given. If I'm given sigma and I have an even root number, then I get this global B. Okay? And so now I look at the global B and I look at its positive definite here, because of weight 3/2. It turns out that's a fact. Okay? So this global B is either BP for some P dividing DB, or it's not. If it's not, everything's 0. If it is, then this class is a vertical class. And I'm about to give you a formula for its height pairing.
And it's
one. Well, all P is dividing DB, well, but for given sigma, there's only one P. Right. Okay. Because this algebra here, if it's not a B upper P, where I've twisted it exactly one finite P, then there's more than one obstruction, and it's 0. Okay? I don't have time to explain more detail. Okay. Okay, so let me try to skip down a little bit here and state the theorem. Here it is. Okay. So in the even and odd cases, here's what happens. So you can look in the notes for a careful description of all the conditions and hypotheses and so on and so forth under which this is completely proved. So in the even case, what happens is that theta hat of F is equal to a constant times FF times the value of the central value here. Okay? You get this relation. In other words, here, and so if this is valid if a B which is now determined by the sigma, which is lurking behind this F always, is equal to BP, P divides DB. Then the theta lift is in the vertical part, and its height pairing with itself is essentially this pairing, or constant, which is explicitly known, times the central value. Okay. This is an analog of Gross's Montreal volume result about values, central values. And then there's the odd case, and in this case, we have that theta hat of F, so now we know it's purely vertical, so it's lying in this Mordell base space, is equal to a constant, again very explicit, times FF times L prime at a half of the walled sigma. So in the even case, when I take this theta lift, I end up in the vertical part of this Chow hat one, and I have an inner product formula which describes the height pairing of the lift in terms of the original L function. So this is like a Gross-Auger type value, a Gross type value formula. And in the odd case, what happens is this class is automatically purely vertical, and in that case you get an explicit formula that says that the height pairing of this horizontal class, which you could retranslate into a Néron Tate pairing on the Jacobian by the isomorphism, which I discussed here. In any case, this height pairing of this class with itself is, again, FF times this guy. So maybe I'll, well, let's see. Let me say one more thing, since I started a moment or two late. Let me just say what's behind the proof of this, because it's the motivation for what happens in the next lecture. Okay, so the basic idea here is the following. I would like to calculate this inner product of F, this height pairing of this arithmetic theta lift of F with itself. And so, if you like, you can see that by putting in the definition of this, so this is the Peterson inner product of this V hat here, I'll put a tau 1 to indicate that's the variable for this first theta lift. There's really sort of two arithmetic theta lifts that I'm pairing here of F, comma, this is Peterson, F, comma, phi hat 1, tau 2, Peterson. That's just by definition. Now, if I switch the order, what I get is that this is F of tau 1, if you like, F of tau 2, and there's some bars and things that maybe we should put in somewhere, but I'm not going to worry about them at the moment. I think they're correct in the notes. And here what I have is phi hat 1 of tau 1, phi hat 1 of tau 2. In other words, I take this generating function, which is valued in Chow hat 1, and I pair it with itself with two different variables. And that gives me, if you like, a kernel function, which I integrate against F, two different variables, to get the height pairing of this lift. Okay. And so now the key result is that this thing is equal to the central derivative of a certain Eisenstein series associated to B, but now of genus 2, and restricted to the diagonal, up to stuff which is O1 thetas. Okay? And so what that means is two things. First of all, I've assumed my Fs are perpendicular to O1 thetas. I did mention that back up here. I said it wasn't important. I'll explain why it's not so important in just a moment. In any case, when I have this identity like this, with this piece over here, these Fs are perp to this. So as far as dumping this expression into the inner product, I can just ignore that. It goes away. Some automorphic stuff, which is perp to the Fs. So I get the Fs against this guy, and then we have to simply remember the doubling integral, which I think Tong Hai described last week, and it's somewhat known to this audience. This will become a doubling integral, which essentially becomes the Heck-L function. Now, there's one trick, and that is that this Eisenstein series, which I haven't described at all, involves some funny sections which are not standard. They involve something which some components which are vanishing at S equals 0, which is where I'm going to be evaluating here, but which are not identically 0. And so what happens is that's how you get these two pieces coming in. And I'll explain maybe next time a little bit why it is you get both of these at once in this picture. But in any case, this is the point, so this is the key relation here. You put that into this integral, and you find that this height pairing is equal to some junk, which is I've described over there, times the value or derivative of this integral. So anyway, the upshot of all this is that the key to proving this kind of an arithmetic result using the modularity of this weight one guy, or weight three halves guy, elliptic modular form guy, is this identity which describes the cup product of one of these guys with itself and relates it to a genus two Eisenstein series. So this is the key thing, and that gives us a chance to do these arithmetic applications. Okay, so I'll discuss that next time. Okay.